This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Thank you for joining us today. My name is Karen Allen, and today I'll be interviewing Lisa Mayo and Jeff Watson about the intersection of data science and data privacy and security. Lisa Mayo is the Director of Data Management at Ballard Spahr. She's been in this role for almost 15 years, and most recently is focusing on data analytics and business intelligence, along with overseeing the firm's data management function. Jeff Watson leads the data science team at Morgan Lewis. Prior to Morgan, Jeff worked across a number of domains, from database architecture and administration to web development, server maintenance, and analytics. Currently, the data science team at Morgan Lewis works from within our information security department and serves multiple teams across the firm to provide data-driven insights and solutions. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Lisa, for sharing your time with us today. My first question, it's been said that privacy is a data management problem with a business process wrapped around it. Can you talk more about that and its impact on things that firms are doing with analytics?
I think from the get-go, you have to get to the data in the first place when you're integrating yourself into any kind of business or team. So from a security perspective, when I started, it was challenging to get access to the data that I needed to complement other things that I was investigating and working with. You might find that if you get HR records or other complementary data sources, they can help you enrich data sets that you're working on with relations. And until you know that they're there and they can be made, you don't really know what you're missing. So it's important to kind of have a full scope on what's available and what you're missing.
Yes, I agree. We need controls at every level, at the database level using inherent SQL functionality, also at the application level with row-level security. We really have to anticipate how the data will be stored and accessed. So most users will have access to the data via a user interface like Power BI or Qlik, or maybe even a custom web application where security is baked in. But we found that a huge risk comes from direct SQL access. And so for those folks, we need to ensure that confidential and private data stays that way. I think back to the time where it was common for multiple users to have the SQL system administrator password. But in today's landscape, that just can't happen. And so in my role as Director of Data Management, even I don't have the system administrator passwords. Only our database manager and our DBA, database administrator. And so we really work together with other business units to ensure that we're abiding by best practices, outside counsel guidelines, along with complying with any regulatory agencies.
So it sounds like there's a lot of complications with getting to the heart of the data that you need to analyze from the first place. So one of the things that, you know, is talked about with analytics is privacy by design. And in general, privacy by design is meant to create systems and workflows with data privacy at the core of the design. Can you talk a little bit about how that can affect the creation of advanced analytics?
Sure. With privacy by design, that calls for privacy to be taken into account throughout the whole process. And so when we were designing our enterprise data warehouse, all private data is secured in its own tables. So for instance, there's a table for demographics, there's another for compensation, and both are completely locked down with privacy as the default. So if you consider that a modern day analytics and BI tool, they're all about the insights and that ability to use natural language processing to maybe ask a question and then return unseen data. And this presents another area of concern, because in this augmented analytics world, we can ask to see these additional insights, but we have to make sure that the user isn't uncovering data that they shouldn't see. And then we also have to ensure that these additional insights still respect the security and the privacy models, for instance, so that clients aren't seeing other clients' data and lawyers or see their own data, but no one else's. And that's a case like at our firm where we kind of have more of a lockdown environment. And so we also need to anticipate the answers to questions that might be posed even by a malicious actor. And so, you know, someone, if you take salaries, for instance, someone that just says, show me the highest salary, and then they're getting that information. So we have to make sure that people aren't trying to interact with any of our advanced analytics tools in a bad way. And this really needs to be a proactive approach that considers the full data lifecycle, including backups and even our retention policies.
I agree with Lisa on the presentation layer as far as making sure that the end user is not seeing data that they're not privy to. And I wanted to comment on the other side of that, whereas on the collection level, if you're not collecting data with a set of credentials that gets you beyond anything that might be embedded as far as ethical walls or any kind of view restrictions, for the people who do need to have a full level scope of detail, you're going to have to make sure that you have that top level connection, or you're going to be missing the things that have been obscured by the abstraction layer.
So basically what you're saying is make sure that you have enough permissions to collect everything that you need, but then at the same time, make sure that your application layer where you're exposing and reporting that is very locked down.
Correct. You almost have to replicate the, in this instance, I'm considering ethical walls. You almost have to replicate how that operates on your presentation layer, depending on who the end user is.
So that leads into my next question. What about result sets? Could they be skewed?
I'm going to say that in a environment where you're working with data houses and data lakes and things that always get interconnected and changed within it, the answer is inherently yes, it's skewed from the get-go, and you're on a constant cyclical working measure of getting everything as close to base as you can, right? You're always going to have additional considerations, ETLs change as far as data that's coming in, things get messed up, things get reaccounted for, things get corrected, so there's always a series of adjustments that you're going to have to be making to make sure that things are staying close to the line.
I agree with Jeff that if this isn't well thought out, then yes, very well, our data sets or result sets can be skewed. And so, again, we need to ensure that aggregates for the intended clients or matters exclude the data that shouldn't be there. And as we start to do more with artificial intelligence and machine learning, we definitely have to be concerned about skewed results in big data. So, for instance, I was reading an article recently from the Software Alliance, and it was saying that insights are only accurate if the underlying data is accurate. And of course, that makes sense, but also the tools are smart, and a smart data scientist is engaged in developing the model to avoid skewed results. And so they talk about this this one app that was created, Boston Street Bump app, and it basically uses smartphones and it incorporates accelerometers and GPS locations, and it's finding potholes from a large number of users every time someone hits a bump. But the problem really came into play if the smartphones with these applications have users who are more likely to be young and affluent and actually responding to the app when they hit a bump. And then the data from the app might not be accurately capturing that data from all demographic areas of the city. And so as a result, then the city's response to these potholes, that can be skewed as well. And so that's really why data scientists often need to be involved to ensure statistical relevance and avoid any bias in these outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, I think in that regard, you know, there's also the huge issue of ethics and AI, which I realize is another topic outside of this conversation. But I wish that they would publish an app like that in certain sections of Philadelphia, because I've hit a couple of potholes that nearly swallowed my car. So what are some ways that firms, since we're talking about privacy, that firms can design analytics models on top of regulated data without risking violating those regulations or privacy of the consumer or the client?
It carries back a bit to the ethical wall discussion we had, whereas you want to be able to report on everything, but then make sure that the data being presented is carved out in the proper way, so you're not exposing gender, ethnicity, things that if you could drill down to an individual level are pieces of information that really just don't need to be shared. And in some cases, as we get GDPR and things like that, they often also need to be retracted entirely.
Hmm. Yeah, and assuming that we do have these ethical walls already in place, there are additional precautions we can take, like SQL encryption and masking. So with our recent enterprise data warehouse project, we ensure that no one outside of the project team has access to the enterprise level data. And instead, what we do is we create data marts, and rights are given to SQL views in the data mart. And then for the tools that sit on top of the data, we also have to consider AD and the logins of some users, and then create specific section access in our BI tools so that the appropriate users can access it, and then those that should not have access to the data don't get access to the data. And so that ensures that, again, our billing attorneys only see their clients. If a lawyer is also a department chair, they're only going to see fee earners in their practice group. And then one of the things we really have to be careful about with advanced analytics, especially if we're linking to what we think is anonymized data from different sources that possibly allow someone to see patterns related to individuals at the firm or even specific clients. And so what we see are many new business models emerging. And some are using like IoT to monitor things like room usage, temperature, GPS. So we have to be cognizant of tools that have the potential to impact people's privacy. And I actually read a really interesting quote in Tech Republic that said, big data analytics has the power to provide insights about people that are far and above what they know about themselves. And so we can really see this. If we're on Facebook or Twitter, the likelihood is those companies, they know our ethnicity, they know our political leanings, as well as our views, just by who we're following and what we like.
I agree with that. I actually went to a presentation at Drexel University last week where a gentleman who does data analytics for Twitter's marketing department talked about some of the things that they do on behalf of their advertisers, and it was really eye-opening. So staying on the topic of privacy and thinking about things that firms needed to do to be prepared for GDPR compliance, and that CCPA is becoming effective in January. Other states have issued their individual laws. Microsoft just announced within the last couple of weeks that they're going to protect all of their consumer data in accordance with the CCPA standard, no matter where their clients are. So it seems like policies on the data could be in a constant state of change in face of pending new regulations every day. So how do you ensure that your analytics design can adapt?
I would say that it's inherent in all reporting that you're going to have the cycle of collecting your information, reviewing it, making your analysis, reporting, and then taking your feedback and reintegrating it into that cycle. So part of the feedback and intake would be the new requirements driven by GDPR and other such policies that are being put into place.
Very true. And we need an agile approach to data management so that new regulations don't throw us too many curveballs. And that really requires good data classification policies and processes, including remediation processes as well, so that we can easily identify personal, private, or confidential data, whether it's structured or unstructured. So at Ballard, we use some third-party tools that allow us to classify the data and then find if any of the data that's considered private or confidential might not be properly secured and protected. And then we can use those reports to move the data and make sure it's in an area that's protected. And again, as I mentioned, you can use masks to secure things like birth dates and social security numbers, even bank account numbers. And then it really becomes important to collaborate with the subject matter experts and the business units to help inform what in the data actually needs protecting.
So we've covered quite a different number of pieces of information. And given that you both have been in your respective roles for a period of time, substantial period of time for each of you, what advice would you give folks that are just getting started with analytics?
I would say it's better to err on the side of too much privacy or security than too little. And we also have to make sure that we're treating internal data with the same caution as we would client data. The biggest risk in today's environments are really data breaches and unethical use of data. And really, none of us want to see our firms in the headlines for either one of those. It can be very embarrassing and have downstream effects. So you really need to think through all of the security and privacy implications from end to end, and then design your approach in such a way that we are able to respond rapidly to new or changing laws.
Thank you, Lisa. In addition to the security considerations involved with that, I would say in general, start with a small data set so you can confirm your results. Start with something that you might already be able to confirm and know in a different tool before you're scaling it up to something else. That way, as you continue to feed it more information and more considerations, you can monitor and see what kind of insights and aberrations might be brought into the mix. Sometimes they're one and the same. There's also a number of free resources from Kaggle to GitHub where you can get data sets and dig into them on your own accord, and plenty of open source tools of which to do so. So there's really only thing stopping you is time, I guess.
And we all have plenty of that in our day jobs working at law firm. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Lisa, so much for your time today. This has been really enlightening. I hope to actually find some of my own time to do some analytics work myself. It looks like it could be very enlightening, although I'm sure I don't have access to all the data we need.
I'm sure I'll find out that I don't either.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.